The following message is from Christ Community Church in Athens, Georgia. For more information and sermons, go to www.christ-community.com. Thank you for listening.
As Thorne said, my name is Cameron Woodard. I'm one of the guys that's on staff here. I'm not normally the guy who is up front, but I'm our director of students for middle and high school. And so I'm just really excited to be up here and able to talk about Psalm 9. I've really enjoyed being able to go over this scripture this past week and a little before that, and just looking at it and reading it has been really good. But it kind of started making me think, because as I was going over this, there's just some other stuff that was going on in my life that involved cars. So if you own cars, you know that it's really frustrating sometimes to own cars. And so one of the decisions that my wife Erin and I made was that there was a 92 BMW 325i convertible that was for sale across the street from where I work. If you don't know what that means, that's okay. It's just a sweet BMW. And I wanted it, and so we bought it. The price was right, but I knew it was going to need some work. I didn't know exactly how much work it was going to need, but I kind of built that into how much I offered him. And so as I started driving it and kind of messing with it, I heard this rattling sound, and I was like, okay, well, this might need a new engine, which is not the greatest thing, but also not that bad. So I had a couple people look at it. They agreed. It sounded like it might need a new engine, but everyone said it might need a new engine, probably needs a new engine, but it could be something small if we could just figure out what it is. So I made an appointment to get it taken into a place in Winer that could take care of it. And so had the appointment set for this Monday, whenever this was going to happen. So the Friday before that Monday, Erin and I are going to the Ware's house. They're not with us, but they're not with us on this Sunday right now. But we're going to hang out. It's like little words make such a big deal. And you don't notice it until you're in front of a bunch of people. They're not with us this Sunday, but we're going to hang out with them. And so we pull into a store to get some stuff. And as I put the car in reverse, I hit the accelerator and just hear, and I'm not going. And I think I forgot to mention, this wasn't the BMW that I was in. This was in the car that I just drive every day. And so reverse is gone. I cancel the appointment for the BMW. Get my Hyundai Sonata into the shop. They look at it. They tell me transmission's going to be done. It's going to be like $2,600 to get it fixed. That's not sounding super great. So we go to pick up the Hyundai in my wife's Honda Accord. So we got a BMW, Hyundai Sonata, Honda Accord. BMW, Hyundai are out. Honda Accord sitting in the parking lot waiting to pick up my Hyundai. And the Honda Accord just shuts off. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. All these cars. Luckily, we were able to get it going. We were able to push the Hyundai around. So just so you know where I am, I have a BMW in the shop waiting on a new engine. I have a Hyundai Sonata that I'm driving currently with no reverse. So if you see me starting to pull into a parking spot, just like wave your hands, because I need to not do that. I've done it twice now since I don't have reverse, and I just have to push it out. Thankfully, there's always been a person standing around. And then the Honda Accord, I was able to figure it out. Somehow there was like a cigarette butt that got in the air filter. I don't know how that happened, but I think that's what it is. So Honda Accord's fine. Don't worry. We're good on that. But the reason I was thinking about this is because during this time, everything's kind of okay. We're not really in over our heads here. Other than the transmission, you know, everything's kind of being taken care of the way that I thought it would be. But I just, no matter what I felt, I didn't feel necessarily abandoned by God. I didn't feel really frustrated towards him, but I also didn't really feel thankful. And there's all these times that we can have in our lives where maybe things are just really terrible and we don't feel very thankful, but maybe it's not that. I mean, it could easily just be something as simple as, just like tests and not feeling as prepared as we could be, or feeling like we studied well and still doing poorly, or maybe like your marriage isn't really like terrible, but also you just don't really feel like you're connecting the way that you would like to, or maybe just at your job, someone else gets a promotion that you get passed over for, the raise that you were promised isn't actually as big as it was, or there's just all these times that things maybe don't go exactly as we would like them to be, And we don't feel thankful, even though we might not necessarily be so frustrated with God at what's happening, we still just aren't overcome with praise over the situation that we're in. But then we look at Psalm 9, and so if you look at the title that's up there, it says, "To the choir master, according to Muth Laban, a Psalm of David." And so what this means is that Muth Laban means death of Laban, could potentially mean death of the son. That's one of the most accepted translations of that. And so no one exactly knows what David was thinking about when he wrote this, but it easily could have been he had a son named Absalom who had died. He could have been writing it after that or thinking about some of the battles of that he'd been in where he'd had to fight and people had to die because of that. And so whatever it was, we can see that if David is thinking about the death of his son or being pursued by enemies or all these different things, it's not a situation that if you and I were in, would be very thankful in. Because it's hard for me to be thankful when my car is messing up, but then David is dealing with these harder things very clearly as the king of a nation that has people that really don't like him and don't want to see him be king, and maybe it's just the death of his son, and then we take all that and we're thinking this is maybe going to be a really lamenting poem that David writes out of that. But the very first thing he says is, "I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will recount all of your wonderful deeds. I will be glad and exult in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High." And to be honest, that just doesn't seem like that should be what's happening, right? It seems like when there's all these tough times going, we can understand these lamenting psalms, but David is saying, "No, God, I'm going to thank you. I'm going to praise you." And so we can see that David is saying God deserves thanks. And so that's kind of the question that we're asking today and kind of wrestling with is, why should I give thanks to God? Like with all the things that are going on in my life, even if I you know, I believe in him, but why should I even be thankful for him? And the answer that David gives us is when he says, "I will recount all of your wonderful deeds. I will be glad and exult in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High." What he's saying is the reason that you should give thanks to God is because of who God is. Why should I give thanks to God? Because of who he is. And so that's the question that we're going to be looking at today. And I think the best way to start is to ask that question of who is God. And luckily, David answers that in the following verses. And so so we can see that starting in verse 3, it says, "When my enemies turn back, they stumble and perish before your presence. For you have maintained my just cause. You have sat on the throne, giving righteous judgment. You have rebuked the nations. You have made the wicked perish. You have blotted out their name forever and ever." And it's a little bit tough sometimes to look at that and exactly see what we should be thankful in that. But the thing is that these are the things that David looks at and says, "I will give thanks with my whole heart, with everything inside of me. All of me is going to be thankful now." And we can see that starting in verse 3 there, the very first reason of why David gives that we should be thankful of who God is because God is our defender. And so David had these enemies, and you and I, you might feel like you have an enemy. You might feel like you have an arch nemesis. It seems like it's sometimes my wife and I'll kind of make jokes about like this person being our arch nemesis in high school because they like stole your girlfriend in eighth grade or something like that. But my guess is that... you probably don't feel like you have all these enemies around you, that people that are coming at you for being a Christian or for whatever reason. It probably doesn't feel exactly like that. But there's definitely a lot more enemies that are out that we can feel. And so if we think about anything that is going to keep us from having the relationship that we should have with God, this is what God is going to defend us against. It says, "My enemies turn back. They stumble and perish before your presence." So anything that is holding us back from having this relationship that we should have with God is going to be an enemy. And I think one of the biggest places that this plays out is just the sin in our lives. So often, the biggest enemy that we have that's holding us back from that relationship is just the sin that we have in ourselves, holding ourselves back. And it can just feel like so crushing sometimes that we don't want to do these things that we do, and David even experienced these kinds of times where there's a way that life should be lived best and we don't live that way, and then because of that we separate ourselves out from God. And the good news here is that God is your defender in this moment. The enemies will turn back. And it says that they stumble and perish before God's presence. It says in verse 4, "For you have maintained my just cause. You have sat on the throne giving righteous judgment." And so David is able to see himself on God's side because he is righteous and because he's aligned himself with God. And so I don't want you to think that at any moment God is just waiting to strike down anything that you feel like is against you. Because that's not necessarily true. It's just that when we are in that relationship with God and when we want to fight against those things that pull us apart from him, then God is going to defend us and he's going to defend you. And this is just good news. And so we can see that because David is on his side, he's able to know that God is going to fight for him. And so then continuing through verse 5, it says, "You have rebuked the nations. You have made the wicked perish before your presence. They stumble. For you have maintained my just cause. You sat on the throne giving righteous judgment. You have rebuked the nations. You have made the wicked perish. You have blotted out their name forever. The enemy came to an end in everlasting ruins. Their cities you rooted out in the very moment of them has perished. But the Lord sits enthroned forever. He's established his throne for justice, and he judges the world with righteousness." And so, another thing that I want to point out here that's important about God being your defender is that the one who is doing the acting in this, the one who is doing everything, is God. And so even though David in his time was having to fight against his enemies, and even though David was having to actually stand up to these different people, he's still able to recognize that the reason that he is being defended is because of God. And it's all God who does anything. And so with David being able to align himself in this relationship with God, he's able to see God act in a specific way. And this is good news for you, and this is good news for me, because in those moments of feeling like we really messed up, And seeing relationships not go the way that we want them to, and even in some instances seeing us be the cause of that, we can know that God has not just left you out to dry. He's not just sat there and said, "You know what, you got yourself in this mess, so you got to get yourself out of it." The good news is that God is the actor who is not making you fix everything for yourself. God is the actor that is saying, "Come and have a relationship with me, and I can be the one that can destroy anything that is going to keep you away from me." And so in this society that we have, it really feels like that's not the way things should work. Because it's a lot of bring yourself up by the bootstraps, and you better take care of this yourself, and it's Nike saying just do it, and all these different places we can see that this world really points to us and says you need to take care of your problems on your own, right? It's saying, you know, just go, whatever you're feeling, just go take care of it. Just go off in your room, cry if you need to, find your smile, come back out, and take care of everything on your own. And that's what we hold up as as just this paramount idea of what life should be, is a bunch of self-sustaining people who don't need anyone else. But that's exhausting, right? And we don't really like to work like that, because we all love playing team sports more than we like playing, some people might like doing track and field, but in a lot of ways we like seeing people work together more than we like seeing someone just jump over a bar and high-five himself and be excited. Even with things like that, we still see that people are on a team. It's still better when you watch the Olympics and you see America is excited that someone has done their event so well, and they go back to their teammates. And so there's still this desire inside of us where, even though we hear from so many places around us that you need to figure stuff out for yourself, we still want other people to share those burdens with us. And God is saying in this passage one step more than that. He's not just saying, I'm going to share in this burden with you, but he's saying, I'm going to take this burden on. I'm going to fight for you. I'm always fighting for you, even when you can't see it, even when you can't feel it, even when it doesn't seem like there's any option out. God is saying, I am with you and I am fighting for you. And that's such a great encouragement to me because I know that there is someone fighting for me and because you can know that there is someone fighting for you. And so God could just take this and leave it there, and he could just be your defender. He could just be fighting for you behind the scenes, but that's not where God leaves it. He doesn't just leave us out to dry and tell us to take care of stuff on our own, or he doesn't just leave us out to dry and say, he'll take care of it, but you just stay over there. And so what we see is in verse 9, David writes, "The Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. And those who know your name put their trust in you. For you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you." So God is your defender. And God should be thanked because he is your defender. But on top of that, God is your stronghold. And another word, some other translations that I've seen use the word refuge. And I really enjoy that because God is your defender, and he is your refuge. And that word refuge, I think, kind of gets thrown around a lot, and it maybe doesn't make an exact sense of what that means. We know that it's someone, you know, looking for safety, but I was just thinking in terms of shelter, and refuge being this shelter, and it brought up this memory that I have of my brothers and I finding this barn in these woods behind our house. So the house that I grew up in, my parents didn't own these woods behind our house, but there was just acres and acres of woods. And we would just go out there and we would just play around all day. We would try to just survive, especially once we started getting into like later middle school and early high school, like way too young to be playing in the woods, or way too old to be playing in the woods. We would just take like a frying pan and some bacon and go off on a Saturday morning and just stay in the woods all day and eat bacon for lunch, and that'd be it. Climb trees and all this kind of stuff. And so one thing that we found in the woods was this just old broken down barn. And for someone who's a kid who loves being in the woods, we loved building shelters, but finding this barn was like the greatest thing that we had ever found ever, because it was already this fortress that we could hide away from the other 9-year-olds who might find our shelter, and we could stay here, and all we had to do was kick like a couple of vultures out from the top of it and, you know, get rid of their nest so they wouldn't come back. And we loved hanging out in this barn, but the specific memory that I have is one day we were off in the woods, we were playing around, and we had two sides. For some reason, there was one side with a whole bunch of dead trees and one side with like a creek or something, so it was all green. We called it like the desert and the rainforest or something. We're in the rainforest. The barn's in the middle. The desert doesn't matter. I didn't need to tell you about that. And it starts just pouring down rain. And so we're pretty far away from our house, and so we're like, let's go to the barn. And so we run to the barn, and we're just, you know, we're trying to get there before it really starts raining. And as soon as we get into the underside of the barn, it might not have happened exactly like this, but I remember just getting in under there and just hearing the sky open up. And it was just rain on rain on rain on rain. And then just imagine that sound of like a tin roof where the rain is hitting that metal. And it went from this moment of just feeling like we're really far away from home to, this is the greatest thing that I've ever been a part of. And I just remember sitting in the second story of this barn, and the rain hitting the roof, and half the barn had collapsed, so it was like still open, and I could smell like the sweet air of the summer. You know when it rains and it's not thundering and it's just kind of, it cools off a little bit in the summer, and everything just looks a little more green, and it just smells really sweet, and there's still just so much rain pouring on the outside, and you can see little streams running down between trees. And I just remember thinking just how comforting that was, just to be there in that moment and just put your hands behind your head and lean back and just enjoy that I was there. But if I wasn't in that barn, I would have been frustrated. I probably would have been cold. I would have been wet. I would have been running, trying to find anywhere for cover. But because of this barn, I was able to have this refuge. And so I think we've all had these times where I think weather is a great place to start if you want to start thinking about finding a refuge. But just imagine that feeling for yourself of when it's really cold outside and it's like late fall or winter, and you walk in somewhere that's just super warm, and then you smell coffee or something, or like whatever pumpkin spice latte, whatever you associate with the fall, and you just feel so comforted knowing that it's so cold outside, and then you come inside, and you can kind of just shake and get like the cold out of you, and just be warm, and just sit on a couch, and just be with the people that are around you, and know that you're safe, or if there's like a lightning storm or something, and you get out of that, and just I want you to think about that moment where you know that you're okay, and where you know that nothing's going to get inside, and that no matter what the weather out there does, no matter what's out there, you're safe. And that's the feeling that is 1/100th of how great of a refuge that God is for you. Because it is saying that the Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. And those who know your name put their trust in you, for you are the Lord. You have not forsaken those who seek you. And so there's a couple things that David says here that I think are important for those who are looking for a refuge. It's saying that the Lord is a stronghold for the oppressed, a stronghold in times of trouble. And so the good news is that feeling that you can have when you find shelter and when you find a refuge, you can have in Christ when you feel oppressed and when you feel weak and when you feel lonely, or when you feel like there is a time of trouble. Because it's not just that God is fighting for you, but he is wanting to open up his arms and welcome you into the safety of a relationship with him that allows you to know that everything is gonna be okay. And it's on this scale that's just 100 times more than you've ever felt on anything in your life. And so we can see God's heart for anybody who is being put down and anybody who feels like they're in trouble. And so, you know, you might not feel like this all the time, but I guarantee there's been times where you just feel lonely, and when you feel left out, and when you feel like things aren't going the way that you want them to, and God is fighting for you, and that is true, but God is comforting you in his refuge. And so then David moves on and says, those who know your name put their trust in you, for you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. And so the next important part of this is it says, those who know your name put their trust in you. And so it can feel a lot like God will bless some and give favor to some and not others just because of who he cares about, but that's not it at all. The way that we can receive God's favor is it says, those who know his name. And this really just means that those who really know Jesus, who really know God, who have a relationship with him. And that's all it takes, is just really laying in and receiving that and having a relationship with God that allows you to put your trust in him. And so if you're in a place where you feel like you want to trust him, where you wish you could trust God, where you see other people trust God, but you don't know how to trust God, then David in this moment says that if you want to have that refuge, if you want to trust God to be that refuge for you, the only thing that you need to do is know his name, is to have a relationship with him, is to really know him and to spend time trying to know him and getting to know him and becoming someone who just sits in his refuge. It says, for you, O Lord, have not forsaken those who seek you. So in that moment, in that time of looking for that relationship with God, seeking after him, trying to hear what he has to say, trying to speak to him, building this relationship and building it all up, you are able to have this relationship, and it promises, and God promises in this, that he has not forsaken those who seek him and those who put their trust in him. And so if you feel like you're in a moment where you want to put your trust in him, but you're not sure if you even really do trust him or if it even works, or you think maybe you trust him, but maybe God's just really not out there for me. I've talked to people before who have felt like they maybe even believe that God is real, but that God's just ignoring him. That is not something that God does. That is not part of God's character. He will never ignore you if you are in a relationship with him. There has never been a person who has really put their trust in God and has been forgotten and abandoned by God. And if that is the way that you feel, I understand it. There's so many people that feel that way. But the best thing that I can say to you is that God promises he doesn't do that. And we see the people who follow him, people who have had enemies chase after them like David, and who've had their son rise up a rebellion against him, and seen enemies come after him, and then seen his son die when that's not what he wanted. Someone in that situation was able to say in a poem that was written so long ago, but we're able to read today, he was able to say, I've put my trust in God, and he has not abandoned me. I am not forsaken. And the problem is that this is such a struggle when you feel forsaken. It's so easy to feel forsaken. Maybe you just are in a place where you, maybe you're in a place where you just feel like you have a big decision to make and God isn't helping you with it. Or maybe you're looking at your sin and you're feeling like, I just keep sinning and I say I don't want to, but nothing is happening. Or maybe there's a big job to do, or maybe you just feel overwhelmed, or I think one of the biggest ones is that it's so easy to feel like we're promised that prayer is going to be answered, and it feels like our prayer isn't being answered, and in those moments, it's so easy to feel forsaken. And in those moments, I promise you that God is there, waiting as a refuge, and even if you don't feel so comforted right now, he is there. And he is comforting, and he is ready to comfort you. And so even though feeling forsaken is a big deal, and feeling like God isn't there is a big deal, the promise that God is there is an even bigger deal. And so we can even look at verse 18 a little bit later on in 9. We don't have this up on the screen, but if you have a Bible or maybe your phone or anything, you can look at it, but I'll read it. In verse 18 of chapter 9, it says, "For the needy shall not always be forgotten, and the hope of the poor shall not perish forever." And so in that, if you feel needy, the best comfort that I can give you is that you are not forgotten. You will never be forgotten. And if it's a struggle to feel like God cares about anybody and to put your trust in him, just looking at these promises over and over again to say that God has not forgotten the forsaken, that God has not forgotten the oppressed, that God has not forgotten the needy, and that in those moments that God is comforting and that God is defending you. In those moments that you feel like that, God is comforting and God is defending you. And so we can look at that and we can say, okay, like I've gotten to a place where I can see that God is my defender. I can see that God is my refuge. And you can say, okay, I'll buy it. God deserves thanks. God deserves this praise that David is saying that he deserves. But that doesn't change the fact that I don't feel thankful. And I don't feel like I know how to put my trust in him. And I don't feel like I even really know how to build this relationship with him. And you might be someone who says that you're a believer. You might say that you're a follower of Christ and that's what you're struggling with. And that's very real. A lot of people feel like that. I feel like that. And you might not say that you're a follower of Christ. And that's okay. You might be thinking, I could never get to a place where I actually feel like that, where I actually feel like I'm thankful to God, because sometimes it just feels like everything else, when you've got 3 cars broken down or when your marriage just isn't going the way that you want it to, it's so easy to feel like there's too much stuff that's going on. I know I should be thankful and I can say thank you, but I don't feel thankful. But David gives us a couple things that we can do to actually be thankful and to start developing that in ourselves. And so one of the very first things that we can see is back in verse 1. David says, "I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will recount all of your wonderful deeds." And so the first thing that we can do to start getting our hearts to a place where we're thankful to God is to, as David says, recount all of his wonderful deeds. And so this feels a little clunky sometimes, right? Just to maybe write down things that God has done in your life. But this is super important, I think. In the Old Testament, we can see when God would do something great, people would take a pile of rocks and just make it together, and then anytime someone would pass that, they would know that God had done something there, and they would give it some kind of name. And I don't think that you should go around piling rocks up, because I went to do some hiking this summer, and I noticed that's super cool now. People just pile up rocks for no reason, see how many they can stack. So maybe don't pile up rocks, but taking time to really think about the things and tangibly write down the things that God has done in your life and keep them in a place where you can read them is so helpful. Because in those moments when it feels like life is just welling up and that there's no way that you could actually get to a place where you're thankful, if you have somewhere that you can look at what is going on and what has happened in your life and remember all those times that you maybe thought that God wasn't going to provide and then things worked out. Or maybe you wanted things to work out in one way, but they worked out in another way. Or maybe you felt hopeless and then suddenly you were able to feel hope. Writing these things down or having just some place that you can look at it is immensely helpful in getting our hearts to this place where we can be thankful to God. And I had one friend in college that would take a rock and he used like a little tiny paintbrush and he would write all the things that he could see God's provision in his life. If that's something that you would like, that'd be a great place to start, writing it down just on a piece of paper and leaving it somewhere that you would actually see it. Could be a great place to start. But just as David says, recount all of his wonderful deeds. And so the second thing that we can do if we don't feel very thankful is we can praise God. And this can also feel a little bit clunky because it's so easy to think of praise as just coming here on a Sunday morning and singing songs. I do think that's important. I think that in history, we can see so many times that an overabundance of thankfulness and excitement just results in songs. Like we see soccer teams have their songs. I'm a Carolina Panthers fan. I know that's crazy, but playing Sweet Caroline at the end of games, I know that they didn't make that up. But that's so great that when you have this moment of just excitement and you finally win a game and then all of a sudden a song starts playing and you're singing, it's so amazing. And so if there's not really an urge inside of you to sing, I would encourage you, a great place is to sing. But then also, just what praise can be is telling God all the things that he has done that is great. And so that's another place you can start, is in praising him, take these things that you've seen, recounting his wonderful deeds, and just talk to God about them. And in that, you'll be reminding yourself of all the things that God has done. You'll be praising a God who deserves thanks. And all of a sudden, even if your heart isn't behind it at first, I guarantee you that as you start praising God more and saying the wonderful things that God has done and adding them into your prayers and finding times to sing together with people in this corporate setting, or possibly if you want to just belt it out in your car, your heart can start to be thankful, even in times when it doesn't seem like there's a reason to be thankful. And so then, in my situation, if I'm in a regular habit of thinking through praising God and being thankful for him, and all of a sudden I have one car that kind of breaks and I'm thinking about being thankful and writing down the things that God has done well, it's on my mind. And I can start to be thankful. And as a second transmission breaks and as a third car just shuts down and magically starts working again, there's things that you can be thankful for that are good, but you can be thankful for the fact that God is God, even in the times that it doesn't seem like there's a specific tangible thing to be thankful for. And the third thing that we can do, this comes out of verse 18, is we can expect God to be who he has always been. And so in verse 18 again, it says, "For the needy shall not always be forgotten, and the hope of the poor shall not perish forever." And that word hope can be translated to say expectation, the expectation of the poor. And so, and it shall not perish forever. And so if we look at who God is and we expect him to keep the promises that we read that he's made through scripture and through through his son Jesus, and if we look at the way that he has always been and we know that God has always been the same and we expect him to always be the same, then this is a great place to start being thankful. It inspires us to really start being thankful because it allows us to take the hard times and it allows us to take the times that feel like there's no way out and to know God has always provided, okay? God has always provided for his people from the very beginning. He will always provide for his people from the very beginning. God has always provided for my family. God has always provided for me. God will always provide for my family. God will always provide for me. And so if we can just look at the way that God is and know that he's promised to be the same forever, and that our expectation will not perish, we can expect great things from God. Because God has done greater things than you have ever seen in your entire life, and he can do greater things than you will ever expect of him. And so one of the greatest ways that we can inspire thanks in our heart is expecting great things of God that are aligned with his character and the way that he's always been. And then when God is the way that he's always been, and we expected that from him, I mean, that just wells up so much thankfulness and so much praise. And I can easily see how even from the death of his son, David is able to say, I will give thanks to the Lord with my whole heart. I will recount all of your wonderful deeds. And one of the greatest things that we can see in the place that we will not be forgotten is that David wrote this a while ago, and he said that the needy shall not be forgotten, and we could see that completed when Jesus came and was able to die on a cross and was able to provide a way to fight the sin and to give us a way to have that relationship with God and bring down that barrier. And so at the very least, if it feels like it's so cloudy and there's no way to actually think of God as providing in any way, just knowing that God fulfilled that one promise is a great place to start.